Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at InternetAdvisor.net. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard. Thank you so much for making room in your schedule for the Internet Advisor. And we have got a great program for you. Are there sharks swimming in the streets in New Jersey? We'll be following up with Superstorm Sandy. Also, national commentator Rich Jaroslawski will be with us in the first hour to talk about Windows Phone 8, the death of Nokia possibly, and firings at Apple. All sorts of interesting things here on the Internet Advisor. Stay tuned. Welcome aboard once again. My name is Foster Brown, your co-host, and with me in studio, part of my faithful posse at least, I've got Ed Rudell in the second command seat. How you doing, Eddie?
I'm doing great, and I have electricity.
Yes! here, at least.
Yep. It took a number of days. I mean, Hurricane Sandy was something else.
It was felt in a lot of places, including in your neighborhood.
Yeah, in Ortonville. I had no power for 3 days.
Oh, I want to talk about that just a bit, because okay. It's kind of an ironic twist in the story. Cal Carson also with us. How you doing, Cal?
Oh, happy, joy. Oh, he's a... pleasure to be here, you know, and I had electricity the entire time.
Yes, we did, and it's nothing, I guess, to crow about. We're very thankful for that, but let's just, Ed, to go back to you quickly on your storm story. You were without power out there. You're in northern Oakland County, north of Detroit, for those of you who may not be aware of the area. It's kind of a rural area, and very often, my daughter lived out of that area.
Yes.
When power goes out because of high winds, you guys are one of the ones that are hit first.
It seems to be, and but luckily I made that investment in 1999 when Y2K was around the corner. I bought a generator.
That's right.
And I'm a jack of all trades, and I wired a panel up to the house, and my brother's an electrician. He helped me with that. And
good. So
and I have the emergency. I have the essentials. I have furnace, refrigerator, well.
Everything's taken. But the ironic thing I thought about it was, tell me why DTE told you were not going to be able to get power until almost a week after the event.
Well, they didn't tell me that, but on the news, on the local news, I saw the caravan of Edison trucks heading to New York to provide assistance.
So that has meant that back here, one of the effects of the storm has been that people who are out without power here are waiting a little longer because the crews are out helping with, of course, areas that are just devastated.
Right. And DTE was overwhelmed, of course. Good luck. And I used to be able to speak to people, but now it's an automated system. Yeah. And the automated system was always calling me on my phone. But then they closed my case without even confirmation. I'm in the car driving home, and they said, congratulations, your power's been restored. Thank you for being a valued customer. And I get home, there's still electricity.
Oh,
and so I called in, and then my ticket was closed. But it's a new system, apparently, because I lose electricity 3 or 4 times a year.
Yeah, but look on the bright side. You're a valued customer.
I am.
At least the robot thinks that way. Cal, you were telling us a story just before we got on the air here about the storm and the fanatic Apple lovers.
Well, just for fun.
In New York City.
But yeah. Over the weekend, yesterday was the launch, as my daughter would say, the launch of the Apple iPad Mini.
Right,
and
the official.
That's when they actually have it in the store.
Yeah, exactly, when it's in the store.
Walk
right.
in and buy it.
Right.
And so in New York City, they had been waiting to get this thing. And, you know, things like, you know, Hurricane Sandy and water and floods and lack of gasoline really doesn't bother an Apple fan that bad, because there was a line there outside the Apple store, 3.5 blocks long, waiting to go in and buy the iPad or the iPad Mini.
Get a life or get an iPad Mini. You have a choice.
It is just amazing the dedication to a product that company has gotten there.
Speaking of things going on this past week, a lot of other big launches going on. Windows, Microsoft managed to get its Windows Phone launched.
Yes.
Also, we're seeing a lot of the Windows Surface, which is a small iPad size
computer that is now, I say computer because it's got a keyboard that can come with it, and most often you see it snapped together.
What are they calling those things? They're not tablets. They're not
PCs. Microsoft is actually calling them PCs. Period. Okay. Just calling them PCs
with a detachable keyboard. Basically.
With a detachable keyboard, and in fact, most people are using them with keyboards.
Yeah.
And there's two different kinds of them, but we won't go into that quite a way. By the way, we're going to be talking with Rich Jaroslawski from Bloomberg News, and we're mm-hmm. talking about a lot of this stuff, but. What happened this last week was people were beginning to sink their teeth into the Windows operating system and the Windows RT Surface. And what I found interesting was that the news that was coming back was more and more positive.
And you're talking about tech writers and reviews and media, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. There almost seemed to be kind of this poison purpose beforehand, saying, well, it's not worth it, it's too big a change, blah, 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 the learning curve. I'm still going through a learning curve with my Mac device. I still have to ask Cal about certain key shortcuts and things like that. Learning curves are natural to the whole computer world, so I never understood why there's this nip-gnawing about it.
Jester this.
Because it's the only way you can fill up that white space on a page. You know, if you talked about all the good stuff and that sort of thing, then, no one really cares because when the thing works, you're happy. You walk on about your business, you bake some cookies and enjoy life. But when it's not working, then people have, they have to pontificate. They have to stand up on pedestals. Right. Or, worse, they take sides. Well, it's an Apple, so it's better. Well, it's Windows. No, it's better. Exactly. And it goes back and
forth. Trying to sift through that, it sometimes gets really hard.
Almost as bad as the elections.
Oh, well, you have nailed it.
Yes.
Both at the same time.
But now, the better part about it is that, at least with the technology, you have fun.
Now, my wife would differ with you on that. Yeah, exactly. You could turn the darn things off or just put the technology aside. Did you see the pictures I mentioned before of sharks in the streets of New Jersey? And, was it really true? Here we had, the collapse of a lot of the infrastructure going on the East Coast. Yeah. And yet it seemed like the Twittersphere and people on Facebook were just alive talking about all sorts of incredible things. What do you believe when that goes on?
Well, that was interesting that you brought that up because the failure of the news department, because the people didn't have the traditional devices, they had handheld devices. So they, as you said, they were actually relying on the Internet or the blogosphere or Twitter or Facebook. And just because it's published on the internet does not make it true.
I gotta tell you, the first time I heard that and saw that picture, the first
word
that came in my mind was this one word: Photoshop.
Well, yes, but I saw a video on CBS of someone taking a shot outside their window in New Jersey. So I believe part of it might be true.
It could very well, because sharks are just offshore.
And it was
create
a video,
pool,
right?
Yeah. Well, who knows? Photoshop might work with videos as well. Back in just a moment to talk to somebody who is a much better expert on all these things. Thank you to, and welcome to our post-apocalyptic Internet Advisor. I am Foster Brown, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson in studio with us. And joining us right now, once again, we're delighted to have him back with us, is a national tech commentator who is with Bloomberg News. That's Rich Jaroslawski. Thank you, Rich, for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Rich, you with us out there?
I am indeed.
Good, I got you. Rich, the most important question of the hour, apparently, is, are there really sharks swimming in the streets of New Jersey?
Well, I'm in San Francisco, so I'm a little far removed. But I do worry that my former house in New Jersey may be underwater.
Oh dear! We, by the way, linked on our Facebook site to something that Ed Riddell found, which is an incredible interactive site. Just kind of as a footnote here, that showed you just drag your mouse from one side to the other of these images. And Ed, they show you the before and after.
Yeah, they were actually tiled to put the two photos on top of each other, before and after. It's an interface that I have never seen before on a website that just with sliding your mouse left and right, you could see before and after images, sort of like on top of each other, mirrored on
certainly
top of each
hope,
other.
Certainly hope that your former home isn't under one of those pictures.
So do I.
Oh, my. Rich, let's talk, first of all, about the Windows phenomenon this week. And that was the Windows Surface RT is out there now. People are getting their hands on it. You, I know, have had your hands on it. Give me some of your thoughts now, kind of at the dust has cleared. What are your thoughts on the Windows Surface RT?
Well, my fundamental thought on it, and I used it for quite a while and used it quite heavily, was, first of all, this is, for all intents and purposes, it's a personal computer. I know all the arguments that say, well, it doesn't use PC-type chips or whatever, but when you use it, it's a PC. And it has a sort of a split personality, as do many Windows 8 devices, because the new start screen is really designed for a touch interface and designed much more for a tablet. Whereas the more traditional Windows desktop now sort of becomes an app that runs in this environment. So I think it's going to be one of these things where there's a very steep learning curve for people in terms of how to use it. Now, the Surface device itself, the actual hardware, I found very nice. You know, very compact, very easy to use, and the hardware, I think, is terrific. The real question is going to be how quickly people adapt to the software.
Now, you mentioned that it's built for a touch device, and I've heard this comment made before. Last night, I happened to be in an Office Depot office supply store with my wife, and I just took her over to one of the laptops that was running Windows 8. I don't even know the brand of it. I wanted to get her initial reaction to it. Of course, she said, "It's very pretty." Okay, that's one step forward.
Well, it is. It's very colorful. And you've got all these tiles, and they're sort of whizzing around the screen, and information is bubbling up from your email or Facebook account or whatever to populate the tile. So it is kind of whizzy.
Now, was I wrong in saying this, though, to her? And I'm interested in get the other guy's reactions as well. I said, honey, here's the neat thing about this for you, because she hates technology but loves using certain things, email, Facebook, and occasionally sending a picture to somebody or receiving a picture. I said, look, you'll only have to deal with these live tiles here. So we'll work it out so the four or five tiles that you really want, your internet browser, et cetera, are all going to be right in front of you there. You won't have to worry about anything else. Am I selling her a bill of goods on that?
Well, in my opinion, kind of don't hate to say it, but yeah, I think you are.
Oh,
rats.
For example, the web browser. One of the issues with both Windows RT and Windows 8 is there are actually two web browsers. There's two completely different versions of Internet Explorer. Mm-hmm. One of them that you launch from the start screen, and it's sort of touch enabled, and it's kind of touch centric version of Internet Explorer. But if you are in the but if you're in the desktop, it's a completely different version of Internet Explorer that's much more traditional. And you can't always tell when you're following a link, for example, from an email, exactly which version you're going to get tossed into.
Now,
that's interesting.
That is interesting. I understand that RT, now we're talking about the Windows Surface RT, okay, folks? There is another computer coming, another laptop coming, essentially, which is the Windows Surface Pro, right? Am I right with the title of that?
I believe so. That's the title, and that one will be, that will truly be a PC in that it will run Intel chips. And the big difference between the Surface that is out now and the Pro version, which is expected in about 3 months, is that the Surface can't run existing Windows programs. It can only run programs that are written for the new environment, the new interface. The Intel-based one will be able to run all the Windows software that you have now.
So why do you think they put out this less than fully capable laptop? Why did they do that, do you think?
Well, it's for one thing, if you don't have, you know, legacy programs that older programs that you have to run, then, you know, it's a non-issue. But this version is much more of a tablet convertible. It's got longer battery life.
Okay.
It's got all the things that you associate more with a mobile device than with a PC.
Right. I mean, it's using the ARM architecture, and a lot of including the Android operating systems run on ARMs as well, and you hit the nail on the head. It's battery
for that matter.
Battery conservation. The other thing I like about this is that Microsoft's decided to include additional ports on there, which you'll find on the Android devices, but you will not find on the iPad devices. And that's, you know, SD drives for additional storage, USB connections, you know, which for expandability purposes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it seems to me, anytime I hear the term ARM processor, it just makes me say netbook. Am I wrong in going in that particular direction?
Well, no, because basically the iPad runs an ARM architecture as well. It's just reduced instruction
set. Rick?
It's like a RISC operating system.
The netbooks actually, the netbooks when they had their vogue, actually ran on Intel architected chips, Intel and AMD chips. So in that regard, these are a little bit different. That having been said, when I did my review of the Surface, my sort of bottom line on it was, this is a netbook, but it's kind of what a netbook should have been.
Yes.
Something that
there
was cool and something that was up to date and everything.
Very, very interesting.
You know, I keep looking at the Windows interface, and I got to say this, and I don't mean it meanly, but it has the feel of a Fisher-Price interface. It's like big blocks that kids would use. Do you feel it's a matured interface, or what's your feeling on it as far as your impression?
Well, I started using the interface. They actually introduced it on the Windows Phone 7 devices.
Yes.
And in fact, we're now about to see the new wave of Windows Phone 8.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like the interface in part because it's not a me too. Unlike Android, it's not sort of a knockoff of iPhone, iPad. It's its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
That having been said, I really think it makes much more sense in a touchscreen environment than, you know, if you've got a 2 years old Windows 7 machine and you're thinking of maybe I should upgrade to Windows 8. I don't think it makes sense in that kind of context.
We should also note, by the way, that there are two different things. If you're going to be upgrading to Windows 8, that's the full Windows 8 operating system you're talking about versus Windows Surface RT, which is very much limited because of having to run on that smaller system.
Right, and I believe Microsoft's whole idea here was to provide information at a glance with their live tile interface. You know, icons have been around since 80s, if you will. And what Microsoft, you know, with the Xerox interface, and what Microsoft wanted to do was, you know, let's provide information at a glance, sort of like what was available on the Palms as well.
Rich, we're going to take a break in just a moment, but when we come back, what I want to do is to ask you about something that's just, pardon me, surfaced near the weekend here, and that was the patent lawsuit by a company called Surfcast. And when we come back, I'd like you to also to comment on how serious you think that is. Rich Jaroslawski, who is with us here, he's with the Bloomberg News, and we'll be back to talk with him more about not only this lawsuit against Microsoft, but also about some of the things that have been happening in the Apple world as well. When we return with the Internet Advisor. I hope when you folks joined us for this program through our podcast that you'll also go to internetadvisor.net and take a look at our show notes, because there you will see, for instance, links to more background on our guests, like Rich Jaroslawski, who's with us right now from Bloomberg News, and other guests that we have on the program. We also have links there to different things that we hope that you'll be able to use to help you. And for some of you who are listening to us before the elections, and I realize that some people will get this after that, there are some links there to things that can help you absolutely free of charge find your way to your ballot. And for some of us, our ballots are literally bed sheets. They're huge this year, and you really need to look at that before you get into the booth. And that is there online. It's called Publius, or PUBLIUS.org, and a couple other links.
Which brings back the old saying from Chicago, vote early, vote often.
Oh, my word. With us again, Rich Jaroslawski from Bloomberg News. Rich, thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor.
Thank you.
Before we went to our break, I asked you a question, and this came up rather recently near the end of the week, and I don't know if you've had a chance to research this yet, but all of a sudden, a company called Surfcast popped up with this lawsuit against Microsoft for their tile interface. And this would seem to be very serious, because if they were able to make it through on that, they could simply shoot down the whole program. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I haven't spent a lot of time with this, though I do note that there are some, you know, big names associated with Surfcast. Jim Canavino, who used to run IBM's personal computer business. So these are not guys who just, wandered in off the street.
Not your typical patent trolls.
No, I don't think you can call them patent trolls, at least doesn't look like it.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, you know, Microsoft has pretty deep pockets, and Microsoft can't really afford to fail on this.
They are
in a lot of ways they are up against it right now, and so one suspects that these things wend their way through the courts. Eventually, the parties may have some conversations, but Microsoft, I can't imagine that this would be anything that would derail Microsoft's efforts. At most, they may have to, you know, they may have to write a check, but they do that all the time.
Yeah, good point. You know, I was looking through the patent. If you type in a patent number on Google, they have their own subsection of patents. And one of the things that it does is it brings up a comparison or citations of similar patents. And the first dozen other patents on here are using different words describing very similar descriptions of what a metro interface is, or Microsoft doesn't want us to say metro, but what the tiled interface is. And, you know, these patents are held by companies like AT&T, Xerox, Philips, Apple, CNET, Pointcast. Basically, they're describing the same thing, tiles or in windows within an interface that provide information from multiple sources.
So it'll be hard to claim prior art. It sounds like, because a lot of other people have been using this.
Right.
Well,
so I mean, someone's going to have going to earn their pay if they want to get this.
Yeah. The lawyers alone will get very wealthy on this. Rich, let's look across the street, if you will. Before we go, I wanted to ask you one question. Were there any particular apps that were missing from the Windows Surface RT that you felt were key to it, or have they basically got the ones you wanted?
Well, the big ones that they have are versions of major Microsoft Office programs, Word, PowerPoint, Excel, that run in the Surface environment. The big missing one, and for a lot of people, particularly who are thinking of getting one to use in a corporate environment, the big missing one is Microsoft Outlook. It does have an email client, but it is not Outlook. It is not it is not Microsoft Exchange. And so for corporate users, that may be a deal killer. On the other hand, the Surface Pro, the Intel-based one that is coming out that will run full Windows 8, that one will have Microsoft Outlook capability. Okay. So that's really the big one that's missing from Surface.
Interesting. You know, what about printing on here? Because this is running the ARM system, I mean, you're going to have a device that is, in essence, a PC with a detachable keyboard. How am I going to print? Will I be able to plug into it? I mean, so many of the printers, though, are wireless now. I would imagine I would just print wirelessly to a home printer. But have you experimented with any of that?
I haven't done a lot of experimenting, but don't forget, it has a USB port.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, you ought to be able to, to print from it. But you know, the bigger question is just how important is printing? It's becoming less and less with every passing
That's
day.
That's very true. But you know what it sounds like, Rich, after your description, I'm beginning to get an image that the Windows Surface RT was put out there before Christmas precisely to get a consumer, you know, the everyday consumer who wants kind of like an iPad, but a little more capable, you know, perhaps than some of the, not just the iPad, but the other devices that are out there, the tablets. Do you get that same sense?
I think so. I think this is definitely something that is more of an individual sale rather than a corporate sale, as a lot of Microsoft traditionally has.
Much more consumer.
The one thing about Surface, though, you got to remember is, you know, how long has it been since Microsoft had a product that there was buzz around?
Yes.
And there's a lot of buzz around the Surface, and that may be as much as anything else what they were after.
I think probably the reason why there's more buzz around is they finally figured out a way to actually advertise their product in a way that people are going to pay attention to it. That new Windows Surface commercial, I spoke
You're
about
right.
it before,
yeah.
and I'll say it again. I was very much impressed with it. It had energy, vitality. It looked like a new Microsoft that was coming out. It just showed the hardware. It really didn't show what it could do, though.
Right,
but
right.
it still, I think that's part of the reason why it's got buzz now.
Yeah, it's like selling the sizzle on the steak.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Now, this of course is a huge gamble for Microsoft as well, because traditionally it has, you know, it's had this ecosystem with the hardware manufacturers, and I can tell you that a lot of hardware manufacturers are not thrilled to now be competing with Microsoft. Mm.
You know, and I think that's one of the reasons why HP pulled their touchpad. Is that, you know, since when they were one of the OEMs, and I work for Hewlett-Packard, as full disclosure, that and I got one of those HP touchpads, and 2 or 3 weeks after they did that, we're stopped manufacturing them. We're not going to go in the tablet market at this time. And I thoroughly believe that Microsoft had a non-disclosure with its OEMs, and they said, damn.
Yeah, they had their nose in the wind. That was quite a while back.
That would be interesting. That's an interesting thought, because mostly what I've heard from the OEMs is the opposite. It is that they were taken by surprise. That Microsoft did a very good job about keeping the Surface quiet
really
until they unveiled it earlier this year, and that was one of the things that I think some OEMs had their noses out of joint a little bit about, was that this was like a surprise.
Now, I've heard some people say, Cal, just a second. I've heard some people say that the Windows Surface RT is kind of like the Google Nexus that was put out, that their phone. In other words, they were like saying to the rest of the OEMs, look, this is the way it ought to look. And then from then on, the OEMs went and did their own versions of it and ended up with all sorts of skins on top of it. But there was this one shining example of how it ought to work. Do you think that's what the Windows Surface RT is about?
Well, that's the way Microsoft has, when they unveiled it, that's kind of what they said to, presumably to assuage some of their hardware partners. That we want this to be a stage for Windows, the new Windows interface for Windows RT and Windows 8, and we want this to show off the new software. But if there's a hot demand for them, I can't believe Microsoft is going to not fulfill
not
that.
Not going to turn away from the market. Cal, you had a question.
Well, I think one of the things, though, is the real proof of the game is whether or not the hardware really is going to perform the way it should, or will we have a tablet that, for lack of a better way to describe it, blue screens on people all the time. And I got to tell you, the first time I saw the pre-demo that they did on it, they had a problem and it locked up in the middle of the demo.
I haven't heard that, though. And the tech writers who were out there, I have yet to hear that come up. I don't know, Rich, have you?
I used the Surface pretty thoroughly, and I did not have the kind of crash problems that, it was more like using a tablet or like using an iPad in that regard than using, say, a Windows Vista computer.
Can you, You've got the Surface. Have you been to their app store? How are the third-party apps adding and performing?
It's pretty sparse right now, to be honest. They and Microsoft, sort of acknowledge that in part by putting the Windows programs, which are still in beta, onto the Surface. The app store is pretty minimal right now, and their hope is, though, that it grows over time, particularly as Windows 8 machines become more prevalent, because the apps that go into that store are supposed to be able to run on both Windows 8 and Windows RT devices.
I thought I had seen, by the way, news that there was this huge jump now in the number of apps that are available there. I was trying to find it quickly, and I can't right now, but I had heard there were a big jump. I want to do this very quickly before we wrap things up. More in your neighborhood, Scott Forstall essentially forced either out or into the background at Apple. What do you think that means about the future of Apple?
Well, I think a couple things. Number one, I think it's Tim Cook putting his stamp on the company a year after Steve Jobs' death. And also, if the rumors would be believed, Forstall had issues in working and playing well with others. And so it might have been, something for harmony's sake as well.
Rich, thanks so much for being with us. Rich Jaroslawski from Bloomberg News. Thanks for being with us here on the Internet Advisor. Hey, Cal, what is the name of that wrestling show? The cage matches. I don't watch it. I'm trying to think about it. What's it called?
I think it's called WJR Internet Advisor is what it is, the way these commercial breaks are going.
I was going to say, it's just like this wrestling match that goes on.
Standing up, pointing Gary fingers back into the audience.
Oh, that would be an even better mix. Part of what we've been wrangling around about the behind the scenes, I think we're going to tackle in the second hour with Mike Amont, because he was the one who began me thinking this way, that computers are moving towards much simpler interfaces with the same complexity behind the scene, because more and more the regular, ordinary, garden variety people want to use it and don't want necessarily to understand it any more than they want to understand what's under the hood of their car.
And they already have a computer just like that. It's made by LeapFrog. Help yourself.
Ah! The genius of LeapFrog is that even the kids can use it. And by the way, how often have we had people call into the show and say, I'm not very knowledgeable about computers. Folks, don't apologize for that. A toaster shouldn't require you reading the menu on the side of it to learn how to use it.
Right. And they won't spend 10 minutes learning how to use a mouse. Like, remember with the, when you used to give your parents a computer in the 80s or the 90s? And the first thing you did is you started up and you gave them solitaire. That way they could develop the coordination to move the mouse and the clicking feature.
Good point. Very good point.
And you're beyond that now. You could just, you can give a 90-year-old grandma one of a tablet, either an iPad or a new Surface device, and they know how to use their finger, and that looks interesting. And they'll be shooting.
You're right with a touch.
They'll be shooting birds across the room.
They'll be working Angry Birds. Yeah. I don't know that I agree with Rich and with many commentators. And Rick Broida said this when he was in here a couple of weeks ago. Our gadget man. I don't know that I agree with the notion that this is best experienced as a touch device. The interface, as I was using it in the store yesterday with a mouse, was working just fine, sliding the tiles back and forth. Now, I have been using a Windows Phone for the last month. So what I'm discovering, I don't have a big learning curve when I go to the Surface. It looks just like the Windows Phone does in terms of its basic layout of the live tiles and how you navigate through those. So I think I'm going to have less of a challenge with that when I get back to that. That's my sense of it, at least.
Right. And go ahead, Cal.
No, you please.
Well, I was going to say that I think it was...
Let him at me.
Was it Cal or was it Rick last week that basically said, we have this entire new interface, but behind it, not on the RT version, but behind it, you'll have the standard Windows desktop.
No, the desktop is there. Behind RT as well.
And think of it, and maybe it was you that made this revelation, just press the single button at the bottom, just like on the iPad. And think of that as your start bar.
On the iPhone, on the iPad, on my Windows Phone, on Android as well, there's that one button you press that takes you back home.
The home button has become ubiquitous. It's on everything.
It's everywhere. But it's also the new start, I think.
Yeah.
And that's why when I hit people, I can't find start. Then just press the home button, homie, and it'll bring you back to that original page where you can, go your way from there.
I don't use a start button on my Mac.
But how many times have we had to dive into Finder to find things?
But here's the point that seriously, there's a point I'm trying to make right here. Uh-huh. If you will notice, Apple has said we have iOS devices and we have the Mac operating system. They're not muddling the desktop.
Oh, they're blurring it.
They're
more
not muddling.
Oh, please.
No, nowhere near
as. Oh, please. Oh,
your iOS device does not look exactly like your Mac device.
No, but each one of them had that same array of, for instance, if I go into, what is it called on
Mission
the Mac
Control.
Now? Mission Control. I had that same array of icons there.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is that the main thrust of using the machine is done mostly in the computer interface. If you want to play around in it, yes, you can. But
absolutely.
Your real work's going to be done there.
Well, isn't it in the dock on a Mac? Your set of icons, at least for me, is I put all the ones that I want in the dock.
Correct.
Same thing as a Windows Phone. I put those tiles that I want exactly in front of my eyes. So, for instance, if I want to find Super Duper, which is the great backup tool that you've taught me about, well, then I have to go into my applications, a Finder applications, and find it, okay? Or there are some shortcuts.
Yes.
I don't know where to find it. But anyway, there's ways to get it. But I have to go behind the scenes to get to that.
But what I'm saying is that when you're using a computer, you use a computer slightly different from a touch machine, such as a phone or a tablet. And what's happening is that it gets to be a little difficult, at least for me, to use a touch interface in a computer environment.
See, but that's the point.
But you'll have
when
that
you said
ability.
For me, I think you're absolutely right. For Rick Broida, when I heard him commenting about it, that he didn't like it after, and for Ed perhaps, or for people who, and I am no tech genius, but I mean I've been working in behind the scenes with the technology, that we're more inclined to want all those details. Most users don't want that.
Yeah, but the other thing I see is that these devices will be able to be customized, the same device, for any type of requirement.
Yes.
Whether or not it's a detachable keyboard, whether or not it's a mobile phone device,
yep.
Whether or not you want to dictate to a document and speak to it, sort of like
absolutely.
You do Siri. And but when you're in a business environment, can you imagine all the people yelling at the computer? talking to the computer.
Of course, I do that anyway.
Yes.
But talking to the computer and trying to
come to my house and hear my wife talking to the computer.
What they'd want to do in a business environment is type a letter.
Yes.
Because you don't want people in the next cubicle over knowing what you're writing to grandma.
Except, now here's an interesting, I'm going to blur this a little bit. I was at a doctor's yesterday, and he was trying to find the report, my medical report. I happen to be visiting a urologist. But anyway, the point was, he hadn't dictated his his findings yet into the system, so he couldn't find it electronically. He had to go back and get the paper. My point is that doctors now are using that dictation form mm-hmm. in order to get into an electronic form that more and more of them are using. So I'm thinking, you're right. We yes. need that kind of variety in the background. But what you just described, for instance, on the Windows Phone interface, and I'm looking for this when I get the, I'm going to be trying out a Windows 8 phone, is that you can change those tiles so that they're big, medium, and small, so that you can then prioritize it. And Cal, it's much like the dock on our Mac devices. You can put the things that you use most often, right, on that launch dock below. And then there are other things behind it. I know where they are, but I don't need to get them. My contention is that as a business, these computer companies like Apple, selling millions of devices, precisely because they're simpler. And again, Steve Jobs' mantra was, it just works. That's what people want. They don't want the complexity. The people who call our show don't want the complexity. They just want it to work.
Yep.
Well, the Mac interface is a simpler interface to use.
Yes,
in some
it
cases
is.
And that sort of thing. But
Much.
Yet, a computer interface is different from a touch device, in my opinion. It's just a different world that you're working in.
I think it's being
because
blurred,
in,
though.
In most touch devices, as a matter of fact, just about all of them, in my opinion, are consumer devices.
Absolutely.
In the fact
that
you're
is.
Just consuming information.
Yes.
Where with a computer, you're creating and consuming information.
But there's a bit of a blend there. For instance, I think if we put a poll out to our listeners, they would say, generally speaking, what I use is email, and that I use Facebook and social kind of things. Occasionally, I may do a Word document. Now, I'm saying that that'll be the bulk of the people who are listening and using their computers. They don't want to use it much more complexly than that. Now, of course, there's a whole other area of people who have traditionally been the majority of computer users, like yourselves and myself, who are much more familiar with all the stuff behind
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but also artists, writers, stuff like that, and people in the media, I mean, they're going to want to have that
Absolutely.
Capability of typing letters, too.
Absolutely. So you've got to be able to have them, give them an ability to get to their editors. I do audio editing, mm-hmm. and I found a wonderful program on Mac that I'm using called Amadeus Pro. Beautiful, by the way.
Could you imagine using Photoshop?
But you're using that on what machine?
On my Mac.
So you're using it on a computer.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Well, how come you're not doing it on your Windows phone?
Because it wasn't built for that kind of experience.
Okay, I'll give you that one.
And I think that that's what's happening. We're getting this whole range of devices. More of this mud wrestling coming up in our second hour. No, in our second hour, Mike Amon is going to be joining us. And Mike is the one, you can blame him for putting the bug in the ear to me earlier on, it must have been almost a year ago, about the appification of computers. And if you want to find out what that means, stick around. Next hour, Mike Amon will join us. We have a lot more to talk about, including Ed's got a great troubleshooting story to share about some things he found, and I got other things to share with you about our home screen. Hey, our home screen is internetadvisor.net. Don't forget to check out our show notes and some other goodies there, especially for you folks who are not voted yet. Some great resources for you. Check it out on our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and also on Facebook, where you can like us, please.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. Have a question? Post it in our discussion forums on our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Hi, Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, along with Ed Rudell and Cal Carson in studio. Here, Gary Baker has the weekend off, and we're talking about all sorts of things. Windows Phone 8, Windows Surface RT, and the future of computing as well. Mike Amon is coming in. He's the guy who started it all for me, thinking about the appification of computers. We'll find out what he meant by that and what it has to do with your next computer. I'm delighted that you folks have allowed us to come into your lives with our program here once again. This is the second hour of the program. If you've just tuned in, last hour we were talking with Rich Jaroslawski from Bloomberg News. Some of his reactions to a lot of the Windows stuff that's coming out, Windows Surface RT, Windows 8, Windows Phone 8. This hour we're going to kind of try to cast our vision towards the future a little bit. Before we do that, though, I'd like to remind you, if you would like to get in touch with us, while we don't have our live program on our flagship station, WJR in Detroit, although the November 10th program will be live on on WJR in Detroit. And we have an exciting one coming with Dave Sawyer, who is he's the gadget guy from Microsoft, always brings in all sorts of toys. So we may first get our hands on the Surface there and see what the things look like. But in addition to that, what it means is that you won't be able to get your questions to us during a call-in. So here's how you do it. And Ed, you suggest this. I think it's an excellent idea. You can either use the Contact Us button at the top of our homepage at InternetAdvisor.net, or simply send an email to advisors at InternetAdvisor.net. Very simple. Advisors, ADVISORS, at InternetAdvisor.net. And that will get to all of us. And if you're listening to us on some of our network stations, for instance, if you're listening to us in Grand Rapids, it'd be Grand Rapids on WJRW on Sundays, or WJIM in Lansing on Sundays, among other places. You could hear us in Saginaw as well, Kalamazoo and Muskegon. All you need to do when you are hearing us is, see, I got a question about my computer I'd like them to tackle. Simply send your email to advisors@internetadvisor.net, and we'll all get hold of that. Hey, guys, let's quickly, before we get to our guest, special guest for this hour, Mike Amon, let's talk a little bit about some of the other things in the news this week. And we've done a lot of Windows talk. Ed, you pointed to an article about, seems like, more bad news for BlackBerry, RIM.
Is this bad news? I guess it is, because the U.S. government has almost exclusively used RIM for years now.
BlackBerry, yeah.
And matter of fact, I remember as a big thing when President Obama was walking around with his BlackBerry. He had to give up his, I think it was his iPhone.
I think it was, yeah.
And he had to go with the BlackBerry. Well, now they've opened up the bidding to other
Defense Department
smart devices at the government of the U.S. Defense Department. So we're thinking Android devices and other smartphones like the iPhone.
Is there a big security concern then with that, Cal, do you think?
Well, in the past there was.
What do you think now, with, like, for instance, bringing an iPhone on board for something like that?
No,
or an Android device?
I don't think so. Most of the enterprise is starting to ramp up and get stronger with the whole concept of bring your own device nowadays. Mm. They're putting things in place that allows people to maintain secure communications even though they're using a non-BlackBerry-type device.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see if they open up to the Windows Phone 8. Now, they didn't say that in particular, but it just said that they were opening up in general, right?
Right, right. So, I mean, that could be another nail in the coffin for RIM. It really could. I mean, unless they're next year when they release their BlackBerry 10.
That's right.
So,
which I don't want to give up on RIM yet, because I think they're gonna pull something off.
I hope they do.
But they're gonna have to do.
But then someone's gonna sue the pants off them again.
Oh Lord!
they're gonna have to pull something off really big and monumental, though. I mean, they're gonna have to come out of the gate screaming like heck, because there's so many out there now, and they've let themselves fall backwards on the fence too far.
They've been playing,
and it's not good.
You know, it's almost like Nokia. Nokia right now is in a desperation Hail Mary play. I mean, if Windows doesn't come through, Windows 8 doesn't come through for Nokia, you can pretty much kiss them goodbye. HTC apparently as well in terms of their income. Not been doing well, either one of them.
They can all make toasters.
Hey, I also saw that during the superstorm came on shore in the East Coast last week, and we were talking about the shark picture there. But on the serious side, tech companies have been pitching in there. Apparently, some of the companies have been helping up by giving free connectivity. In some cases, that I see stories, I think.
Well,
was.
Yeah, you know, and I saw an interesting article about using little chips of wood and pieces of broken home to charge your cell phones. There was a company that had basically a burner type device that heated water and charged your cell phone.
Oh,
so they were just picking up debris from the busted up homes and charging their cell phones.
It makes all the sense in the world. Think about it, though, Foster. Those phones and stuff don't work. If they can't connect to the internet, people can't consume all that wonderful, pricey stuff that's out there to get.
That's true.
Income stream gets knocked down. So if we're putting out a little bit of money to provide people with the ability to get to that stuff, your income stream can continue.
I thought the greatest irony of all for me was when I heard one of my favorite podcasts is Mac Break Weekly with Leo Laporte and Andy Inatko, who writes for the Chicago Sun-Times, lives in Boston. He was talking about the fact that he had all of these battery backups, et cetera, for his mobile devices and his computers. The heck with his refrigerator or anything else? Seriously. He made sure that that all of his technical devices were working. Because
it's probably
he
how
could
he
eat
keeps
out
his,
someplace. And
that's probably how he keeps getting his bread and butter.
Oh,
you know?
Certainly.
Well, you know, when I lost my electricity because of the Sandy that came around, that's one of the things I did. I have cable. So if I have my wireless router and my cable modem had juice to it, I had internet access.
Oh, well, Comcast, by the way, was offering free Wi-Fi access through November 7th in 8 states in Washington, D.C.
Well, I'm glad they're spending my money on something.
I know that I'm not getting that benefit here. Oh, wow. By the way, one thing, speaking of money, that I saw this last week that I don't know if you guys have a little bit of a concern. Sorry about stepping back into talking about Windows 8 again, but this is something that one of our listeners texted me with, or pardon me, gave me a message through Facebook. Bill Carver, thank you for this, that some people are under the impression they pay like one price to upgrade and then they've got like five machines. Microsoft, right now, you have a deal going on between October 26th and January 31st of 2013. For $40 per machine, you can get up to five upgrades at that price.
Oh, interesting.
But it's per machine, so that's $200 for five machines. So keep that in mind, folks. If you're going to be upgrading a number of machines, you're going to pay for each one. Well, finally, Mike Amon, who is our guest, the president and CEO of San Joaquin Partnership out on the left coast, gets to speak for himself, because I have been quoting him innumerable times over the past year since he's been here. How you doing, Mike? Mike, can you hear me? All of a sudden, Mike, come on, you there? All right, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to put this on hold and have our screeners check out to make sure that Mike is there. It would be a tragedy if after all this time we couldn't get him on the line.
You know what the best thing about that is? That any fact now that you quote him on, you won't be wrong.
You know, and he drove into the office specifically because you wanted a landline.
No, that's terrible.
And he goes, what's a landline?
He doesn't normally have a landline available. But
while we're waiting, you know, in news this week, if you don't already know it and you happen to own an iOS device like an iPad or an iPhone or something like that, there was a new release of the Apple iOS update to 6.0.1.
Okay.
And it's an over-the-air release, which means you could just pull it down. You don't necessarily have to have it connected to your computer. And it'd be a good time for you, you know, to take a look at that before you do it.
Okay.
Back up your device.
Now, if we have an iPhone, does it back up through iTunes?
iCloud.
Oh, through iCloud.
Unless you connect it up to your computer, then it backs it up to your computer.
But you, and there's a setting for that, though,
yes,
in terms of the backup. You have to make sure that's set up.
You can either have it set up. When you connect it to your computer, you can either have it back up to the computer or you can have it back up to the cloud.
Okay.
But if you don't use the computer, then it backs it up to the cloud.
And you would suggest to the cloud as the safest way of doing that?
I wouldn't suggest anything. What I would say is make sure you back it up before you update it.
Make sure
most people are reporting it's been going smooth, not a problem. But you don't want to be that one that has that one occasional problem.
Yeah, occasional
problem. Plus, you're supposed to be backing up things anyway.
All right. Let's now introduce the man of the hour, Mike Amon. Welcome to the Internet Advisor again, Mike.
Hi, Foster. It's great to be back with you folks.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you. What happened was that the string between our two tin cans broke. You know, the distance is pretty long, but we got
to
reconnect.
It's a long ways out here to the coast.
Glad to have you with us. Last time you were in studio with us, and I kind of tongue-in-cheek before I introduced you last time, said this time around you get to speak for yourself, because I have been quoting you innumerably about what I've been calling the appification of computers. To explain that very briefly, the sense I got from the last time you were in talking about the future of computing was that it was going to be moving more towards using these little icons or individual apps to interact with our computers versus the old, if you will, information tree that had the Explorer tree in Windows, for instance. Is that close to what you were saying?
Absolutely, and we are living it today.
What examples do you see of that going on today?
Well, I just think certainly Apple with their apps and the other computing companies, device manufacturers have all come one way or another to an app environment. Not that I've had my hands on Windows 8, but what I see in their commercials, it's just another adaptation of using your hands and using an app. So I think the game is certainly now all about apps. My prediction now is we're going to go to voice, and maybe we want to talk a little bit more about that later, but what we were talking about ways back is certainly what everyone uses now.
All right. And when did that change begin to happen, do you see? When did you begin to first see that as a direction things were going in?
Oh, you know, I've had every iPad and I think just about every iPhone since the beginning. And
that's 2007, right?
Therefore, I've been using apps as long as Apple hasn't invented them.
Okay. What is the advantage, then, of an app over the way we have traditionally gone to start programs, pick out the program you want, and then you go into it, if you will, in the Windows world at least?
Well, as I said in my email, I've never been one for hierarchical trees and really having to think about where things are on my computer. I think, your session before last week, people... Mm-hmm. We're talking about their desktop, and I've done the same thing that everyone else does because I use a PC in the office. I have an Apple phone and an iPad and all the rest, but I put all my icons back up on Windows desktop, which is not something that you should be doing from a programming standpoint.
Yes.
In fact, you do because it's convenient.
So, that's right.
So again, you're wanting to see that icon. You just want to on my PC in the office. I want to reach out and just touch that icon and make it work. So it's changed very fast. We're still using keyboards, but I think another 5 years, it's not as if keyboards are going to go away, but it'll be just another part of the overall computing environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Taking your vision down the road and looking further, because during the break, Ed and I were talking about this very thing, and it's the one thing that I've always wanted with a computer more than touch, more than anything else, was voice control. How do you see that progressing in the near future, and what is your vision and your desire?
Hi, Cal. It's unfortunate we're not sitting together, last night on a Show Me site that I was looking at, there was a duel between Siri and a Google phone, and the Google phone obviously beat Siri. But the quickness of the Google phone in responding to the request, and I can send you this website.
Yeah, send me the link. I'll post the link after the
The real secret is in Wired Magazine's article about Google's data centers, and this one happened to be in North Carolina. Back in the tough old days when nobody wanted data centers and nobody wanted the dark fiber, Google bought up a lot of this and for pennies on the dollar. And in so doing, they have just one of the quickest networks that are out there. And therefore, they can respond with their voice product or app, if you like, versus Siri. And it's not as if that's a win or lose situation. That's really where we're going. Frankly, Apple Siri has not been something that I've been using that much. Mm-hmm. I've used some of the Google voice control features. And frankly, I've got to retrain myself into being, Foster, you talk about where computers going.
Yeah.
We're going to use our hands. We're going to use our voices. We're going to use our... a keyboard, we're going to use a stylus. It's really going to be up to us in how we want to compute as such.
Yeah.
And from a person who perhaps is listening to your radio show that has a handicap of some sort,
yeah.
I think computing is more and more and more available to handicapped individuals.
Yes, we're all getting to, I think, we're all getting to enjoy some of the things that were described as adaptive kind of experiences. Calvin, Ed.
Now, see, my question maybe wasn't clear enough and that sort of thing, and I understand what you just said about Siri and Google, but I'm talking about more as far as an interface to the actual operating system on a computer. In other words, I want to walk up to the computer, say, turn on, start Microsoft Word, open up my mail, any mail that came from Ed, put that in the trash, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, I tell you what, let's leave that question hanging. Ed, I know you had a question as well. Mike Amon is our guest here right now. Mike is a dear friend of ours, has been on the show with us before. He is the president and CEO of San Joaquin Partnership, and we'll be back with him to talk more about the future of computing and how our voices and even gestures are going to be helping us to use our computers. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, and a special welcome to the folks who are listening to us on the Michigan Talk Network, our affiliates in Muskegon at WKLQ AM 1490. And in Kalamazoo, WKMI, AM 1360. Those folks listen to us at midday on Sunday. We're talking with Mike Amon, who is our guest here, has been in studio with us a number of times. Look forward to his next visit from the coast. He is the president, CEO of San Joaquin Partnership, and Mike has been around the business for a long time. And I think in particular, Mike, what I've enjoyed with you is that taking your skills, your experience, and looking into the future, which is what we've been doing just recently. Ed, you had a question, I think, from Mike as a follow-up on our talking about voice as a way of interacting.
Well, you know, not so much of a question as much as an observation. Of course, I'm part of the Star Trek generation, and I see as, you know, a computer is going to be nothing more than an extension of our voice or hands. Or think of the CSI or Minority Report, how they used computers.
Mm.
You know, how they were able to, like, they could make a hand gesture and swipe something off their computer onto a tablet, walk to the other side of the room, and then put it on the screen. You know, you could tell the computer to, you know, turn up the temperature, contact Foster, prepare that broadcast that we were going to review so that we could do some editing. It's going to be plain language type of commands like that is how I, at some point, vision how computer speech and our interaction with the future computers will be.
Mike, your thoughts?
Well, Ed, I think you're right. With biotechnologies coming along, we may all live long enough to participate in just what you're talking about, but look at smart meters, for example, in our homes now, and where that's going to take us with a smart grid. We're going to see that. We're going to be able to, let me give you an example. I'm a Comcast user out here, and my wife and I were at dinner, and she was shocked to remember that she forgot to record a NBA game. And so I just called it up on my phone and put it on record for her. Mm-hmm. When Gary and I and a bunch of other guys got together to start an internet company in 96, I mean, from 96 to where we are now, it's amazing. So, Star Trek is not that far off. I think, going back to Cal for a second, how can we get the computer to just respond to us? I think that's going to come through calendaring a lot of the normal routine things with voice input will automatically will respond to our needs. Kind of routine like you were talking about, email. I'm notified by my phone, by my iPad, and by my PC if I've got a meeting coming up. I hear ding, 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 and it's not Southwest Airlines. And so a lot of these things, I think you have to look at it incrementally, and that progress since we really got involved with internet back in 96 has been amazing to me. And what's more amazing is it's not just young people. I was down at a corporate real estate conference in L.A. last weekend, and two things out of that. One, there was a 70-year-old guy across the table with his iPad, and the question in the room was, how many have tablets? Almost everyone had a tablet in the room of about 100 people. How many have iPads? Everybody had an iPad with the exception of one. But the 70-year-old wanted to talk to me about styluses, and he had a smaller one, so I shared my larger one to get a feel for it. He was excited about using computing technology, the internet, and all that, and he's 70 years old.
Yep.
So my other example is on the drive back, I'm watching Michigan football on ESPN on my iPhone.
You weren't driving.
No, I wasn't driving. My wife was driving. You know, I was just comfortable and watching and without a lot of issues as far as streaming.
Yeah, yeah.
That and is we're doing 70 miles an hour in the middle of nowhere in central California. So 96 is a long ways away from where we are today, and it's all incremental. So we've got to pay attention to the incremental improvements for the overall progress that we've seen in reaching Ed's ideal of Star Trek.
You know, go ahead.
I was going to say that, that's a good point, is all these individual or incremental advances in the interface, at some point someone's going to be able to tie them all together.
Through
voice gestures or whatever. And for some reason, when you were describing the incremental advancements, I was thinking of the movie The Fly. And the modern one made in 1985, where the guy says, well, he developed a transportation device where he could transport himself from one room to another. And he goes, well, I'm not so much of a mad scientist or an engineer. I'm more or less a guy that took a piece of this and a piece of that and just put them all together.
Yeah. And that essentially is the way that technology, well, I think that science and invention has worked in general. I want to put this to you, Mike. Cal and I have been kind of wrestling with this, that I see that there is a simplification process that's going on with the way that we interact with our computers, and that Windows 8, to me, is probably the best example of that right now. Now, there's lots of wrinkles to iron out in it, but basically, I see our interaction with our computers getting simpler and simpler. Rather than climbing around that information tree, we're going to have just a few tiles of things that we want, and then we'll know where to go to get the other stuff. Does that sound like it makes sense to you in terms of how things are going to look on our computers?
Well, it's not only look, but how we use them, and that's what's grown the use of computing devices over the last 20 years. It's I always used to say the world's a bad interface, and so things have gotten better over the last 20 years or so in just the way in how we have to go about, as you folks do every week, trying to solve interface problems, in many cases,
right,
finding different things on people's computers to help them. So, yeah, it's getting a lot simpler because of the vast technology experts that we have out there that are putting all this together. I am just amazed at the capability of our computer engineers that have knitted all this together, and it just doesn't seem like there's any end to it. So I'm with Ed. The interfaces are getting simpler, and that's good because my wife, for example, she doesn't have a lot of patience. Like, I fell off the, you know, I don't have network. And so she throws the iPad at me, and I immediately...
You've just described why it's good for me that my wife doesn't have a portable device, because it's a desktop, and she can't pick it up and throw it at me, because she would. Cal, go ahead.
And I guess that's the other thing. They're very rugged.
Cal?
So Mike, here's me from the other side of that fence that Foster wants to be on, the one that he wants to be on is the Fisher-Price interface. Give me the big blocks and let me just play with those. As opposed to, do you feel this is kind of a dumbing down of technology for the masses, basically, is what this is all about?
Well, you could characterize it as dumbing down, but I just think that it makes you more efficient. Why should we have to think about using computers so much?
Yep.
We should just be able to touch it, talk to it. And one other thing that we haven't talked about, and especially with the Xbox and some of the gaming companies who... now have gestures.
Yes.
We haven't seen gesturing come in yet into tablets and the rest, but maybe that would be an answer to your question about again, automating the device. You come in, you snap your fingers. You remember the old commercial with the light?
And oh, yes.
Clap
yeah.
your hands. Or
clap on, clap off. Yeah, I remember
well,
that.
You know, the one thing I was thinking, it's not so much the dumbing down. It's the improvement in the interface and the software in the background. As an example, if I was to dictate to my computer, hey, I have a calendar event, and then remind me tomorrow I was
I'd
supposed to
I'd love to be able to do that.
Oh, yeah, but not just that. You know, remind me of that appointment that I have with those software engineers about such and such a topic.
Right.
While you're in the background, you get a couple replies from your artificial intelligence on your computer that's already found recent publications of those articles without even you talking to it, yeah. so that you can brief yourself on those articles about some paper that was published at some university.
Can I just talk about something that happened to me recently? I didn't know this was a feature on the Windows phone, and I have it. We were traveling. I had it plugged in. I got a text message from somebody. All of a sudden, on my car audio system, it says, "You have received a text message from so-and-so. Would you like me to read it to you?" Yeah, cool. Go ahead. It read it to me. And then it said, "Would you like to respond?" I said, "Yeah." And it says, "Okay, just a moment. Say it." And I gave a brief message. Boom. Done. It was amazing. I didn't know it could do that.
Which is the point I'm trying to... It's where I'm at. For my computer, I want to be able to know what's going on with it. For all my other appliance devices... Dumb them down as much as you want.
Computers are becoming appliances. I think that's it. Mike, hey, thanks for being with us. We look forward to your being in town soon and to exploring more of the future with you, all right?
I look forward to it, too. Thanks again.
Thanks so much for being with us. This is Mike Amon, who is from San Joaquin, a very good friend of ours, and to Gary Baker. We'll be back in just a minute to go to the final round. Let me take this opportunity to thank a couple of unsung heroes who work behind the glass for us, and that's Annie Nichols, the Our Lady of the Phones, and Rich Lusinski, who is our engineer here. Thank you so much for helping us with our program and getting people on the air with us and keeping us on the way.
Is that like WWF on WJR? Let's get ready to rumble!
That's just about it. That's just about it. They're the referees and the people who keep the lights on. But thank you very much for that. And for the rest of you, by the way, don't forget there's all sorts of resources for you at internetadvisor.net. That's our homepage. If you'd like to get in touch with, you have a question, for instance. You listen to us on one of our affiliates, and or you have a question anytime, and you happen to be listening to the podcast. Ed, how can they get hold of us?
Well, they could get a hold of us by going to our Internet Advisor's website and clicking on the top for contact us, mm-hmm. or they could email us directly by sending an email address to advisors@internetadvisors.net.
What is that address again?
advisors@internetadvisors.net.
I always love to do that. It just sounds so much fun.
Can you see the death rays I'm shooting at him as he asked me to repeat that again?
He just turns around and looks at me and goes like, why do you want me to say advisors@internetadvisors.net?
Why do you want me to say it again?
By the way, on our show notes, which are on our page, you'll find out with the podcast as well, that you'll have information there about some websites that we talk about during the show. And Mike Amon has sent us something about a site that shows the comparison between Siri and Google voice technology. It's just one. And then you will also find, for those of you who hear this before the elections on November the 6th, we have a couple of links up there to a few organizations that will help you to find out what's on your ballot so that you have a chance before you go in to give some thought to it, circle maybe the people you want to elect, and how you want to vote on the different things so that when you go in, it's going to be a big ballot in most cases that you have that information and you can walk through it comfortably having given it some thought. Speaking of having given it some thought, being prepared, of course, as a Boy Scout model, Ed's very much involved in Boy Scouts, but Cal, you had a device that apparently came out of the recent disaster that would help people to be prepared in the case of, let's say, accompanying me and being around the things that I drink and their devices.
Well, if you're the sort of person that likes to hang out with Foster and you've got nothing else left to do and you've got tons of electronic devices and you go like, I want those field tested just to make sure they're right. And one of the field testings might be, I don't know, water immersion or something like that. And you got it really wet. The fine people make a device called the Beastie Bag.
What is a Beastie Bag?
A Beastie Bag is a it's like a huge Ziploc bag, and it comes in different sizes, all the way from the size of an iPhone all the way up to something that you put a full-fledged laptop into.
Oh,
you
wow.
Slide it into this bag, zip it shut, let it sit in there for 48 hours, and it literally sucks all the moisture out of the device that you put in that bag.
Oh, it has those little silicon packets we all dispose of from our electronic devices?
It's even got some different sort of technology. It's a gel technology that I think holds 20 times the amount of water weight, that sort of thing.
It's like the silicon, but it's even better, apparently. Yeah. They maximized it.
And supposedly, in some cases, not all, because they don't guarantee it, but it's going to suck all the moisture out, and it may just make that device
survive. Is it a healthy snack afterwards?
The device is the bag, no.
No, okay.
But you may want to look into the Beastie Bag and check it out. We'll have a link up on internetadvisor.net where you can go look at it, and... hey, it might just save you in that one situation where you're stuck.
Ed, I want you to give us, you did some troubleshooting this week, and you found a couple of places I've never heard about before behind the scenes on Windows machines that can help get a Windows XP machine, for instance, back up and going again, or not more than a Windows XP machine. Do you remember the conversation we had?
Oh, yeah, I just can't remember the name of that folder again.
You had another
time. I did.
Of course, while he's thinking about it, did you know that XP will no longer be supported come 2013?
Right. Right, exactly.
Yeah. So you may want to
think 11 years. 11 years. It's time to move up. And I have heard by the people, by the way, while Ed's looking this up, in the meantime, saying that it looks like it's better. If you're going to go to Windows 8, it'd be better if you're going to get a new device to get one with Windows 8 on it. And just a reminder for you again, be careful when you buy a new machine. If it says it's got Windows 8 on it, make sure it's Windows 8 Pro. Because that's got all the bells and whistles on it.
And make sure it says it's Windows 8 on the machine and not Windows 8 compatible.
That's very good. Very, very good point. The Windows 8 Pro, apparently, if you don't have it, if you get a machine, let's say, that has Windows 8 on it, it'll cost you like $69 now, at least, to upgrade. They have an upgrade that will let you go to Windows 8 Pro plus the Windows Creative Center. What do they call it? Windows Entertainment Pro, Center. What is that called?
Media Center.
Media Center. Windows Media Center, because that does not come with Windows 8 out of the box. However, with Windows 8 Pro, you can upgrade to it pretty, I think, for free if you have Windows 8 Pro. Now, Ed's shaking his head. You did find that.
I did find it. It's not sure how many operating systems it applies to. But my wife brought home a computer. She said, here, this is from a friend, and she's about ready to throw it through the window.
It's really slow.
But it's really heavy, and it's really slow. So... first thing I was going to do, it's infected with malware. So I figured I'd try to install Malware Bytes. Well, it was so slow, I couldn't even do that. So being a technician, and one of the last things you think of, but it should be the first, is a failed hard drive or failing hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I checked the Windows Event Viewer, saw that there were a couple disk errors. I ran a check disk, and that seemed to correct the problem. But unfortunately, because of the error, all the Windows updates that were downloaded were corrupted.
Mm.
So what I had to do was delete all the Windows updates, because one of the problems that every time your computer comes up, it checks to see if you have Windows updates and then attempts to install them or prompts you to install them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to delete all the Windows updates that were downloaded.
And so where are they? What's the folder they're in?
The folder for Windows XP and I believe for Vista, and I'm not sure about Windows 7, mm-hmm. is under the Windows folder. There's a folder called Software Distributions.
Okay. Software.
And in that software distributions, it's a hidden file, so you have to configure the Explorer to view hidden folders, and then you have to rename it in safe mode.
Mm.
So once you rename it in safe mode, call it bad software distributions.
Yeah, bad.
and then Windows will automatically recreate the folder and re-download all the updates.
Now,
that took care of a majority of her problems. And it just so happens that part of the bad blocks on her hard drive were also in her Windows page file. So the page file I had to go while I was in safe mode as well. I had to delete the page file as well. And then I did a check disk. I deleted the software distributions folder. I deleted the page file. I did a defrag.
Mm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that the page file would be somewhere else. And then I rebooted and everything was at that point. Her all her data was in a contiguous manner. Microsoft was downloading new updates, and then I could download malware. And she did have a few pieces of spyware and remnants of some Trojans that were on there.
But what's interesting about all the things you said is that it wasn't necessarily the case of a virus being responsible for it, but a lot of other things that actually were not virus related, but were, let's say, good housekeeping kind of issues with a Microsoft operating system.
Correct. And the lucky part was is that she had to install Windows XP Service Pack 3, which is pretty big.
Huge. Yeah.
And if there were any other damaged Windows files, there's probably a 30% or 50% chance that those would have been updated when she put on Service Pack 3, which is what I'd done. So if there were any other damaged Windows file, that reinstalling Windows Service Pack 3 fixed those problems.
What I'm going to ask you to do then is, if you could put this together in a short article.
Are you kidding me?
Just what you said, but just what you said in that form.
Yes. And guess what? Right. Guess what, Foster? He doesn't have to do that short article. You know why? They can go to internetadvisor.net and listen to the podcast.
You're right. You could do that.
And I may type it up.
Yeah, and we'll put it under the advice column, so you could do it there as well. Thanks so much, Ed. I wanted you to mention that because for some people who have had problems with their Windows machine, it may not be viruses.
Right.
It may actually be some of these other things under the hood. Hey, folks, it's a fun program. We've had a lot of fun here. Cal, you're going to be gone next week, but the next time we come around, Dave Sawyer will be with us from Microsoft. He'll be bringing all sorts of toys into the studio. We'll be playing them here, and I hope that you'll join us for that program when we come back here at the Internet Advisor. For this week, again, thank you to the folks, Annie and to Rich, and to all of you guys, Ed and Cal, for being here. And my name is Foster Brown. Thank you so much for allowing us to be in your lives with the Internet Advisor. We'll be back again soon. Don't miss the program.
You've been listening to a podcast of the second hour of WJR's Internet Advisor. To hear previous podcasts, visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.